It's Friday, March 3rd, 2006. This is Ellen Norry. I'm recording an interview with Vice Provost Richard Walker for the SIUE 50th Anniversary History. I gave you a list of questions that you could think about, and one of them was, how did you come to
be here at SIUE? Yeah.
And tell me about your present job.
Well, right now I'm the Assistant Vice Chancellor for Administration. Mm-hmm. In that role, I'm responsible for planning the construction of, planning new buildings and major renovations. Mm-hmm. So that means hiring architects and engineers, working through the design process, mm-hmm. the financing process, the board approval process, the bidding process, the construction process, okay. and the ribbon cutting.
Okay. I mean, up everything. To the ribbon cutting.
I mean, from the moment that there's a viable project, meaning that the chancellor has said, yes, let's do this thing. Then we start the planning, and we start getting the background done on it. So that's basically that's the most of my job right now. I also spend a great deal of time. I have responsibility for budgeting about 1/4 of the university for all of the UCA area, and I manage the lease agreements for all the land that we have or property that we have that we lease to other people and organizations. So that's
does that include University Park places?
It doesn't include University Park for the most part. The park has 400 acres, I think, and they have their own folks over there that are responsible for developing it and maintaining it. The difference is that the university owns a couple of buildings over there, for which the administration is responsible, and in that case, that falls to me.
Okay.
For example, the pharmacy building we just opened, the planning for that was VCA responsibility. Mm-hmm.
Now, I once, at a Chicago Cubs thing, I once met one of the architects for the dorms, for the original dorms, and I was wondering, are you using the same architect as your plant, or is that privileged information?
No, I'll tell you.
You said it was hard to fit in with Obata's buildings. That it was a challenge that he was talking about.
Now, you talking about the architect for the Cougar Village or for...
For the residence halls.
We're not using the same architect because that architect is actually involved in a litigation with us.
Over the sealing up in the
over
mold.
Over the moisture, the high moisture in the, okay. in the hall.
That's
so we're actually in the fourth residence hall, we're using Mackie Mitchell Associates.
You've used them before.
This is the very first time we've used Mackie Mitchell.
Okay. They've bid on things before, though.
They have tried to do work Good. For us. We're also... I mean, we have used them to do the preliminary work for this academic success center.
I've seen the book about it.
Yeah. But their big project for us right now is the new residence hall.
So are you involved then with planning the academic success center also?
If it's a new facility, I'm responsible for planning it. I mean, technically the chancellor is responsible.
Of course.
Yeah. And then he assigns facilities to the vice chancellor for administration. I mean, how do you say this diplomatically? But the real paperwork comes down to me. I don't have a staff.
I
have my share of secretary.
Oh my!
Although we have a campus architect with whom I work closely, and I.
Who is the campus architect?
His name is Rick Klein.
I think I've got his name somewhere. He's been the campus architect since about 2000. I think
that's about right, yeah. I was going to say 6-7 years, so that's...
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And then, I would just want to ask you something about, because I've been reading about the development of the buildings, and I know with these buildings, when they hired HOK, HOK wanted to do all the contracting, to contract it all within firms that they had dealt with and so forth. But John Randall, who was the university architect then, said no, didn't really trust them. And so they contracted out everything to a whole bunch of
different
firms. And that later resulted in
problems.
Many problems.
Well,
but how do you do that now? I hope that isn't. I'm just interested
absolutely.
In
no, it's
these
actually state
questions.
Law.
Uh-huh.
It's a little more strict now than it used to be
okay.
in the early 60s. But state law says we have to hold a bidding, an open bidding
open
process
bidding.
For
okay.
the actual,
for the engineering firms. And
for the engineering firm, it's different. You
uh-huh.
have to do a selection process, but it's not by bid. In other words, the money doesn't necessarily determine it.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on their experience and qualifications.
Uh-huh.
That's how we do the selection for architect and engineering. But for contractors who actually do the building,
yes.
they're the ones who put the board, mm-hmm. nail in the board, that has to be by formal bidding. And
okay.
if you're a contractor, then I tell you, here's what mm-hmm. I want done, and you tell me how much you can do it for. If this person over here can do it for less, then we choose him.
Okay. I think it was the engineering firm that was contracted out.
Could be.
For these buildings.
Usually nowadays, I don't know if they did then, but nowadays they go hand in hand. In other words,
yes,
an architect
right. that's
comes
what,
forward with his engineer.
Yes,
says,
that's
who
well,
I
that's
want
what,
to use, and then we hire the package.
Uh-huh. But we didn't in the case of these original buildings. So, and anyway, I always wanted to ask about that. That's interesting.
So that's what I do now.
Okay.
Now you asked me about, how did I get to SIU
yes.
in the first place and all that. When I finished my undergraduate work at Indiana State University in arts administration, I took a job in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I worked for the arts, first the Performing Arts Center in Tulsa, and then the Arts and Humanities Council. And at the when I was at the Arts and Humanities Council, coordinating an arts series for them, I attended a conference in New York City for people like myself who booked artists
mm-hmm.
to come in to their area. And at a luncheon at that conference, just happened by fluke to sit next to Lyle Ward, who was there with an assignment to get people to apply for the job to coordinate this program full time. And that's the place, if you're looking for someone,
mm-hmm.
that's where you would go.
And this was when, about 1980?
That would have been, I came in fall of 86, uh-huh. so the conference would have been in
spring of 85.
It was actually, at the time, it was in December of 85.
Mm-hmm.
I take that back. I get mixed up with my date. It was December of 85 was the conference. I came here in May of 86.
Mm-hmm.
I switched to my job, now in the October of
mm-hmm.
01. So I get mixed up which was spring, which is fall, but that's how it worked. Conference was in winter, then I was hired in the spring. So I sat next to him. He said, I told him what I was doing. I said, how do you like it out there? Well, it's okay. It's not permanent. I got to find a job. He said, well, we got this, new series that the president wants to start up. They're looking for someone to coordinate it full time, work with the faculty committee. And I was interested. I applied. I came out, and there I am.
Okay.
In fact, at the time I came out for the interview, toured the town. We looked at the campus, and SIUE was much different back then.
Yes.
But I thought, this little university, this little town, I'll give it 5 years. I could do this for 5 years. Build my
mm-hmm.
resume. Stepping stone to something bigger. Well, as I like to say, I'm on my, just finished my fourth 5-year plan. because the program evolved, the campus evolved, and we became involved in the community, and so much we couldn't leave anymore. We're just so much a part of it. So I've grown to love it, and probably.
Well, I think people in the community admire you very much too.
Oh,
no, that's what I hear.
Nice.
But you built the Arts and Issues into a very successful program, and it was during your time that it became self-supporting,
mm-hmm.
more or less.
It's uh-huh. still the university supports this, as I understand it. The university still supports the salaries and the overhead, mm-hmm. telephone, lights, that kind of thing. But programmatically, it's self-supporting, and that is all the arts and speaker fees.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most, or at least when I left it, most of the out-of-pocket operational expenses mm-hmm. were self-supporting.
Now,
postage, printing, that kind of thing.
Is this from ticket sales and also regular donations?
Mm-hmm. It was a three-part funding scenario when I... Keep in mind, when I came here in 86, it was a two-part funding scenario in that the university supported nearly all of it. And, I don't know, the ticket prices at the time, I think, were $3 or
mm-hmm.
something. So there was a nominal charge, and that money was used also.
Mm-hmm.
But it was such a small piece of the funding pie, it wasn't taken too seriously. But that evolved as, money in the state started getting tight really about that same time. So
mm-hmm.
by, the early 90s, something dramatic had to be done or else
mm-hmm.
the series just wasn't going to survive. And so we started fundraising. In fact, I remember spending a summer once going through the it's a Illinois, Missouri book on philanthropy, looking for foundations that would support this type of program in a state school.
Mm-hmm.
And spent that time developing locally fundraising lists for smaller dollars.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the $500,000 kind of gifts.
Mm-hmm.
So that started almost immediately, and so it became, the goal was for the fundraising to pay for the artists and speaker fees.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I started writing grants to the Illinois Arts Council. And about that same time in the early 90s, we started then a sort of individual fundraising campaign as well, kind of the Friends of, although we didn't formalize it as that group.
Of Arts and Issues.
Friends of Arts and Issues.
Mm-hmm. I've seen your picture with Jacques Cousteau in 1991.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Actually, I forgot. There are a lot of those. I have a picture just about everybody, and I have their autograph. The ones where they've autographed them to me, Rich, thanks for the thing, I didn't turn those over to Kerber. I guess I probably should.
Well, it's probably nice.
So that they're better kept than what I'm doing. They're
family to see it,
Right.
Be inspired.
A lot of them. So this funding scenario changed so that it was one third for ticket sales, because at the same time we started raising ticket prices, third from the university, and a third in fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point, I think the highest point of annual fundraising was $80,000. I was expected every year to
yes.
raise $80,000, and that was a grind.
Yes. Oh, of course it is.
So by year, by the year, 12, I'll say, it all came to a peak, and I said, boy, I can't keep doing this forever. Keep banging on doors, looking
mm-hmm.
for that, and I lose $1,000 contributor, and my whole, budget is
shot,
and I
got to yes.
find another someone to replace it,
because mm-hmm.
I've already made commitments for the contract, and so by year 12 I was upsetting. I was
burned
out on it, yeah, because you're only as good as the last performance. What have you done for me lately? So at that point, unfortunately, it took me 3 more years to find what I was going to
uh-huh.
do, because I was in that position for 15 years. And I didn't, you know, missing, my wife and I, Missy, we talked about it. We really didn't want to give up our house on the lake.
Of course not.
Done that way.
Yes.
We didn't want, you know, I was entrenched in the city council by that point.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to, you know, and I like the university, I like the community, for me to pick up and,
right,
go to a job somewhere, across the country, would have just been this major thing. I know people do it all the time, but it wasn't for me. And so we thought, so I stuck with it for a few more years. This position came up at the university, and that I'm in now, applied for it, and was grateful to be offered it. And so someone, the logical question I would think, you may be thinking is, well, how do you go? Well, during that time, by the way, I worked and completed my public administration and master's
in public from here.
Yes, it was a great program. I just loved it. I wouldn't have mind continuing, take another year of courses. I just loved it.
I just interviewed Dennis Hostetler during a big interview.
I go from arts administration, public administration ties in, study nonprofits and government. So, but during that last few years of arts and issues, I was elected to the city council. At the time, we didn't have a city administrator, and I was, one of my responsibilities on the council was chairman of the finance committee.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the chairman of the finance committee at the time was responsible for presenting the city's budget. Technically, it was the finance committee, but who actually puts it together? The chairman of the finance committee.
Mm-hmm.
So I would spend my days here at the university, go home, have a quick bite to dinner, and then go up to City Hall till 1 in the morning trying to put this $23 million budget together.
Yes. That's what that was running through my mind. Well, that's $23 million. That's almost like running the budget of...
Well, that's what my budget is now for BCA.
Mm-hmm.
Only I get, it's part of my full-time job. So, to do that, it was...
Yes.
It amazes me now, looking back, that the city allowed that to continue as long as it did.
Without a professional paid person.
Well, think about it. I mean, we were putting together $23 million by a volunteer.
Yes.
Elected volunteer, nevertheless.
When were you elected to the city council?
Okay.
Would that be about
96?
Okay. I can check that.
It was 95 or 96.
Okay.
Okay. That's how you remember things. I remember things by when my kids were born. So it's 94 and 96. The first one, I think, was born. We were waiting on the second one. It was 95 or 96.
Okay. Yes, that really is amazing.
So, but that gave me experience in budgeting.
Yes.
I mean, hands-on. I mean, I had the budgeting with the Arts and Issues series, but I was dealing with... about $150,000 budget, but to manage a $23 million budget gave me tremendous insight into the city and how it functions, but how, financially it functions too. So that gave me the background for this job. During that time, I also coordinated a couple projects for some capital projects, primarily the Downtown Streetscape program.
That's exactly.
Concrete and the sidewalks and the decorative furniture,
nice.
All that stuff. Thank you. So that gave me the project experience to bring to this job. During my years, I also worked on, for the university, a concept design for a new theater on the campus.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked with the architects, the engineers, the planning process on the campus. For that one project. So all of that sort of came together and just seemed like a logical fit, something I enjoy doing, and so far it has worked out well.
Yes. Well, that's really interesting how you came to.
But how the Streetscape came about, it's actually my heart is still with the arts, with the performing arts.
Yes.
And so I had always been interested in redeveloping the Wiley Theater downtown. It's a big building, it's an expensive building to renovate, but at the time, when I first got involved in it, which is now 7-8 years ago, the building was owned by a private individual who lived in the Netherlands and hired someone locally to start fixing it up. Well, the owner decided he didn't want it anymore. For some reason, I'd rather not put on paper, but
okay.
You know, the man at the time who still lives around here, quite frankly, I think legally embezzled, maybe that's an oxymoron, but sort of took him, if you will, in my opinion, took a lot of money from him, didn't put it in the building.
Okay.
Put it up his nose instead.
And, oh, dear.
Anyway, the man got tired of it and said, so the man decided he wanted to sell the building. I then asked Mayor Gary Niebuhr if he would go with me to the then Senator Evelyn Bowles' office to get a special appropriation from the state for the city to purchase the building. Mm-hmm. He agreed. The senator agreed. She was successful, and the city got the money to buy the building and put a new roof on it because the roof was leaking, kind of destroying the
tornado had just taken the back off it.
Yeah, but that had been fixed. Yeah, the tornado in the 80s took the what they call a fly loft, above the stage area off, and did some damage, but that was repaired. That wasn't part of the leak. So the city owned it now, so they came up with, well, what do we do next? Well, I was chair of the Finance Committee, remember? So I said, well, the next step, we need a funding source for this. Let's set up what's called a tax increment finance district, a TIF district, in downtown, such that the property owners downtown, part of the tax that they pay, property tax they pay, would go toward fixing up the downtown. Their own taxes would go to fix up the property that they, you know, have a business in. City Council approved it, and the first project we did with that money was the streetcar project.
Okay.
So that's kind of a long story of getting.
And it has succeeded, I think.
Absolutely.
We've lived here, you know, since 1978, and it seems like the town center underwent a kind of death and then revival.
Right. It's always been, you know, the county, well, not always, but it's been the county seat for as long as I've been around.
Yes.
And then some. But you're right. It closed down, you know, and there were a lot of first floor storefronts that were open for rent waiting to happen. We did that streetscape project, and it is amazing. You can't get first floor tenant space downtown anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And when they become vacant, because a business goes under for whatever reason, it's picked up right away. It doesn't stay vacant for long. And the types of businesses have changed too. Think about it.
Yes.
It's now, I mean, that one whole end of it where the coffee shop and the vintage clothing store, the bead store, and now
the yarn store.
The yarn store. Jamie Henderson's moving into Busy Bee. He's fixing that up.
Oh,
a local architect. So that's, and he's kind of a, I don't know if you know Jamie or not, but Jamie's
I go to the bus station every day, so I think of him every day.
Yeah. Right. Well, he's moving out of his existing building across from the library into what was Busy Bee. And he's fixing that up. And Jamie's got he's got a nice concept for design. And,
I like the bus station.
Yeah,
I really love it.
It's not the same old, you know, traditional stuff. He's involved in a development, by the way, that actually goes to City Council Tuesday night if we approve it. And I'm sure we will. On Plum Street, that I hope they print. What, you don't like it?
Well, I just have read about it. It just, to me, it's too bad to be draining those wetlands there in a way. But
oh, okay, well, he's
paving more, more up here and causing more runoff down in the...
His original plan was to change the creek and build in the wetlands.
Uh-huh.
They've changed that. They're not moving the creek at all.
Oh, that's
They're not building on the wetlands. It's concrete and roof.
Yes.
I mean, that's an inevitability, I'm afraid.
Uh-huh.
But I think when you see where they're locating it now, it's much smaller than it was originally.
That's good.
And his original plan had problems with it. But this one is much smaller. Just the whole look of it. It looks like something belongs out in Oregon.
Good.
It's just such a nice sort of feel to it.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
So it's changed dramatically. It's still... I agree. It's still concrete and rooftops and runoff. But it's they're not building on the other side of the creek by the residences at all. In
fact, that's good.
In fact, they've agreed to designate it as a conservation district.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, that's really great.
So they really,
because that is kind of a pretty drive right now. It's very beautiful, and it's got this bike access. And
that's, you know, honestly, one of the things why it'll never change. I don't see most of that drive changing because it's owned by Madison County Transit, Madison County.
Oh, that's good.
Or it's already developed to a point where they, you know, can't do anything with it. So there's very little of it in private hands.
Well, that
maybe
would be
20%.
Nice.
So, I mean, there will be some. But most of it will stay as it is now. So anyway,
that's
it's
good.
A long. So how do we get to
downtown? You're talking about your app. Activities as a member of the city council.
And I still haven't given up on the Wilding.
Well, the Art Center thing is still going there, isn't it?
No, not there. No. The Edwardsville Art Center has evolved somewhat, too. They now want to build on campus here and
they do.
Develop a program that ties into art and design curriculum. So actually, there's a letter that Dave Werner penned that promised them 15 acres out across from where the MRF site was for an outdoor sculpture park and academic facility. So it'd be, I think it'd be studio and teaching classes that our students and faculty would be involved in.
Good. I think Ivy Cooper has just been so great in the art department. She's been a great administrator for them.
I know, I feel like I'm just sort of all over the place here, but you mentioned Ivy. One of the things I've been able to do with Ivy, with my city hat, is to take, you know, the student sculpture program they have on campus.
Yes.
Now, they make these things.
Right.
Well, after they're done here, I have put together a group of people in the city that reviews what the students have, and each year picks one to go into a city park.
Oh, that's very nice.
So
that's really good.
We have, right now we have 4 of student sculptures located in city parks, and we'll have, I've got another one. I'm ready for another one that we're ready to move.
Oh, good. Oh, that's
nice?
Really
it's
nice.
It's called the Sculpture in the Park program. It's really
yes.
not a program. It's just, you know, we just, it's a cooperative thing between university and the city.
Right.
So
all this will bring the campus and the city closer together.
All this does.
I think students, especially being more residential, I think they do come to Edwardsville more.
They need to.
Now.
Right. Yeah. You know, 20 years ago, when I came here, the university and the community and the city. Just, I never did get the sense that there was that, you know, much closeness. I got the sense from the community, oh, you work out there at the university? Okay, good, glad you're here. You know, have you ever been on campus? No, any reason to be on campus. But that has changed dramatically as the campus continues to grow in a number, but just the buildings.
Yes.
We become closer physically to Edwardsville, such that
we are part of the city.
The
now.
Residential development has also grown toward us.
Yes.
And then annexing into the city, which we weren't. We weren't part of the city of Edwardsville. We are now legally part of the city of Edwardsville.
Yes.
Has changed all of that so much. Mm-hmm. There's just so much integration between the people who work and out here and study out here into the community. It can't help but we've melded together so much better than we were 20 years ago.
Right, I agree. The policemen have City of Edwardsville on their uniforms.
Exactly. I was going to mention that. Just the cooperation between the police departments has gotten so much better. You know, as students need, you know, grow, as our enrollment grows, we need more housing for students. We can't accommodate all of it. So housing for students, you know, the housing market in the city of Edwardsville for apartments, multifamily residential, has grown tremendously and continues to grow.
Yes. And that has to be, this is a, what do I know, but it seems like it has to be very carefully planned, though, in a way, and monitored, so that it doesn't become a series of slums.
Right.
Have you seen the signs around campus about Cherry Hills? There's a lot of signs around campus saying, don't rent at Cherry Hills. They don't, your contract says they won't fix things, and, you know.
I didn't know that.
I just noticed them yesterday, but I thought that was kind of a, they're not in Edwardsville, though. I think they're probably Glen Carbon.
Cherry Hills?
I don't know.
The boundary lines in that, I think Cherry Hills is in Edwardsville.
Is it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just noticed that. I just walked by a bulletin board in Peck yesterday, and there's about three big signs, each different, you know.
Okay.
And giving,
I don't see that too often.
No.
I remember, this is a little bit different, but I remember coming here, you know, 20 years ago, and for a long time I heard stories about people who talked about, I think partly in jest, about the faculty, you know, here, you know, who slept on grass mats, and, you know, knew it, as the campus grew, that it was just going to be this sort of strange element changing, you know, their community for something they didn't want to do. Well, you know, obviously it was a fear unfounded, and I can't imagine the community without FWE now. Man,
and I think people in the community now are always telling you about their own education, you know, too, when you talk to them, so that you, I don't know, there's kind of a pride in education in the whole community.
Yes,
that
yes,
may
you're
have
right.
come from that relationship.
Mm-hmm. And many of them now have degrees from.
From SIU.
SIU or SIUE. Mm-hmm. You think about it, we've been open almost 50 years. That's got a few degrees along the way, I imagine.
Yeah, right.
But having the administrator, full-time administrator, helps to get some consistency from year to year for the university to have a contract,
now,
rather than the latest elected official.
The full-time, the city manager, Bennett Dickman, was hired about 1997. Is that, you were doing the budgets in 95, 96.
That it's probably right.
You did it for 3 years, you said you did the budget, so it must have been 97 or 98.
That
was
would
hired.
Be about the right time frame. Uh-huh. By the way, if you're ever looking for someone with good memory, good family stories, Ben is the guy. Man,
okay.
He, of course, grew up in Edwardsville, but he can tell you.
Well, I'm
whose
glad.
Brother was this and owned what store, and you know what, you know when his you know wife was stopped for DUI, and I mean, he is an amazing memory for people details and how they're connected and who owned what business. And, I am impressed with Ben in that regard. You know, another thing I think that has brought the community, not just Edwardsville, but the Southwest Illinois together with. SIUE are the development of the bike trails. We used to be, you know, we had our bike trails on campus, but they were sort of isolated amongst themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you could, if you really wanted to, and you were aggressive about it, you could get from Edwardsville to town on a bike trail, but it wasn't a developed bike trail.
No.
Now, my goodness, we are a hub. I mean, we're the center of a much more complex network. And we're recognized on all those trail maps, and people realize that they can get on a bike, they come to SIU, take a break, get something to eat and drink, and then continue on their ride.
I just heard something on National Public Radio, I guess, about how in development that's really considered a prime amenity, trails.
I would agree with that. There are those that oppose that and think, you know, it's sort of just the opposite. What a waste of money to be, you know, all these. I mean, I hear it. I hear it from people.
That you
that,
do.
I mean, I hear both sides, but it reminds me that there are always two sides, you know. Sides.
Yes, that's right.
And in this case, that there are folks out there that think trails. There are folks that think that we ought to bulldoze the Wildy and expand more parking for downtown.
Oh, really?
So
well,
it takes all kinds, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Well, what is going to happen to the Wildy?
It's a very, as I mentioned earlier, very expensive renovation project. $2.5 million was what we had estimated it, and that was a year or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it a little too much for the city to bite off all by
yes.
itself. And as much as I want to see it opened again for performances,
uh-huh.
can I really justify spending $3 million, $2.5 to $3 million on the Wildy when we've still got streets and sidewalks?
Yes, streets.
We need a couple more, police officers. Mm-hmm. Public work staff is stretched to its limit.
Mm-hmm.
can you really justify that?
Yep.
So I've been trying to find a developer who is interested in the building.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the building. It's more than just a theater. You've been in it.
Yes, I have
front
been in
part
it.
Of the building. Okay, uh-huh. there, it's really two buildings that are joined together.
Mm-hmm.
The front building has a second, third floor
yes.
ballroom type space, very open, mm-hmm. generic space that could be used for just about anything, including a profit center for someone, a business,
yes,
offices,
right. mm-hmm.
Restaurant, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The auditorium is different. It's for the size that it is. In my opinion, will never be a profit center.
Mm-hmm.
The United States just doesn't fund performances
mm-hmm.
Like they do in Europe, where smaller venues can make a profit.
Yes.
So, if a developer would come in and put up some money for the what I call the profit center, the tenant space up front, the city, I think, would then agree to match that, and now it starts to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
You're matching using
yes.
matching funds for the theater portion of it, the
mm-hmm.
community space, if you will, and get that going again.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked. I've taken dozens of potential developers through the building. It's just very expensive
yes.
for them, and we haven't been able to make it work out yet. I have someone now. I've got two more developers
mm-hmm.
that are both very excited about project. One of them just wants to do the building, wants to put a microbrewery in,
uh-huh.
On the first floor and a restaurant on the second floor with a banquet hall on the third floor, and then let the city develop the auditorium. Perfect. It's exactly what I was looking for.
Uh-huh.
I mean, ideally, I'd really like to have the second, third floor for other types of art spaces.
Uh-huh, right.
But it's
whatever.
Just, you can't
right.
do it. But the auditorium is the key here. So I like that concept, and it ties in. You could have food and drink with
mm-hmm.
the performances, and and I'm thinking live performances and movies, like art movies or travel films.
There's a place like that in Portland where I've gone with my son and his friend Jamie. It's an old public school building where there's some public space, and then there's restaurants and movie theater.
It's
and,
a nice... Uh-huh. A nice combination. The second guy, and so that's who I'm working with right now. He's been given some time by the city council to prepare
mm-hmm.
a plan. He's been given 3 months, and we just did it. So the second guy, however, will come to speak to us soon. That in the event that doesn't work out, he wants to come in. He wants to put offices, like professional offices, on the second, third floor. He has plans to extend the building and some parking. It's a
uh-huh.
very big concept involving some other properties downtown.
Oh.
So, I think we'll see. But,
yeah.
And I won't know until we meet with him what his thoughts are on the auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that we develop the front part and the auditorium be developed for live performances and movies, but not first-run movies like they have at Showplace 12.
It
doesn't add anything to the community.
Them, right?
Well,
uh-huh.
it doesn't do anything for us,
mm-hmm.
to save to put another Harry Potter out there.
Right.
But it does, and nothing in Harry Potter, it's just, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But it does do something to the community, to put, one of the Tivoli-type films,
mm-hmm.
or do travel films, or do children's, older, children's movies on Saturday or Sunday matinee.
Yes, that's a nice
that
idea.
Mm-hmm. things that aren't already available in the area
mm-hmm.
without having to travel mm-hmm. to St. Louis. So. And it'll be, 300 to 400 seats, so that would lend itself to that.
Sounds...
I think it could be done. I just don't think it can make any money.
Yeah.
That's a problem in
yeah,
our country.
Yeah, right. Oh, we won't make any. But anyway.
Uh-huh.
Well, you talked about how the relationship between the university and the city has changed over the years. Is it a smooth thing with the water? I know the water has always been a subject of negotiation between the university and the city, and that was one of the points of negotiation about University Park.
Right.
I think was.
That's right. I don't think it's been a point of contention. It's
okay.
been an issue,
mm-hmm.
certainly, because it's, you know, it's just you got to.
The
argument city has to produce the water, and
yes.
they can't. I mean, someone has to pay for it. And it's not
yes.
right to ask the residents to fund
SIUE's
operation that way, or University Park. So yes,
uh-huh.
yes, the university does pay for the production of that water. So when the city and the university agreed to annex University Park,
mm-hmm.
Part of that deal was that because the city was going to get the additional property tax,
mm-hmm.
that the university would get a discounted water rate.
Okay.
And the university has been taking advantage of that rate
mm-hmm.
since that agreement was signed.
Okay.
That agreement is expiring, and so we will begin, the city will begin negotiations with the university about what that new rate should be, particularly given that development in the park hasn't exactly taken off as
no.
it was
no.
thought.
That's another thing. Well, I want to ask you, since you're in charge of buildings, and maybe you can't, maybe you're not in charge of this. One is about the ethanol plant. Now, I understand that the maintenance costs of it every year are approximately $500,000. And
more than I think.
And
I
that this recent new bill, of course, will take care of some of it, right? $3 million all of it for a few years. But
the bill is $3 million plus $1 million
every year for the foreseeable future.
And $1 million will take care of it. I
okay.
think that $3 million might be for some plant upgrades. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't want to say about that. But the million, I understand, is for the upgrade.
Okay.
You're right. Because the state and the federal government came to the university and said, you know, we give you this money to build the building.
Yes.
And we said, that's great. We love it. We'll take it. We'll build it. Don't forget, it's going to be an expensive place
yes.
to run. So we need the operating money. State said, no problem, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. Well, we built the building. It's like, okay, you know what? The electric bills do.
Yes.
You know,
that's what I saw
it?
In the last records I could look at, 2001 were the last.
Not to be critical of the state, but the state didn't keep up its end of the bargain,
uh-huh.
quite honestly.
Okay.
So the university had no choice except to shut it down.
Yes.
We weren't going to do that. So I always have to say what I'm talking about, the city,
yes.
university.
Uh-huh. Right, yes.
So the university has had to step up and fund to the tune of what I thought it was $750,000 because
it
once,
might
once
be more.
Built,
I've seen these breakdowns from 10 years off about the cost.
Once the building is built, I basically hand the keys over to whoever's the user is, and then
mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry about the operating
yes.
End of it. So
this one.
So I don't know the details, but I understood it was about close to $750,000 and growing, and that comes straight out of the university's budget.
Yes, that's what
after all these years, maybe the $3 million helped us recover it. I don't think so. But I don't know.
Uh-huh.
But now that would put the responsibility where it belongs.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the state built the building. The state ought to be funding
mm-hmm.
the operation of the building.
Right.
That's
And then the other thing I was going to ask about, and I was thinking about this with the Wiley, if they would build that conference center and hotel on campus in University Park, and then people had conferences. Some of the sessions could meet downtown in the Wiley. And I bet from our campus, we have a lot of good scholars out here. I bet there would be a lot of academic conferences and probably a lot of other kinds of conferences, too. And that probably would help out with the Wiley if it could be a venue for meetings,
Absolutely. It,
uh-huh.
it would be a public
space. The auditorium, a public space.
For daytime,
uh-huh.
whatever.
Yeah.
I could see a church group using it on Sunday.
Yes.
I could see the university using it for, or corporations using it for training things on
mm-hmm.
during the day or tying in with conferences. Absolutely. It's
right.
not just performances. It could also be used for as a public gathering space for ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor's state of the city and
yes.
whatever.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That'd be neat. The mayor's state of the city. I like that.
And you know, it's, you know, Wiley was built or opened in 1909. So we're not, we're coming up on the 100th.
That's right, the 100th anniversary of it.
So, I got 3 years to finish this. I really want to have it open before then, but I think if everything goes well, that's what we're on track to do, is to open it on in its 100th year.
Oh, wouldn't that's
that
wonderful.
That would be a nice time. I'd like to have it open before then, but that would be a nice time.
That would be great.
It would be a nice thing to take. It'd be nice to open it now and then have a 100th, you know, sort of thing later to another resurgence of interest into it. It worked out the way it is.
Right.
And another thing I wanted to mention to you that has changed for the university, and it's just now changing, by the way, just recently. Well, no, we're just now formalizing. Well, is you mentioned earlier that, you know, HOK did the designs for the original campus.
Yes.
That's true. And since then, we've really been in this building boom in the last 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Think about it. Between the University Park, you know, the residence halls, engineering, Art and Design building, Dunham Hall expansion, a lot of infrastructure improvement for the boiler system and the chiller system, electrical upgrades, so forth. School of Pharmacy building, the fitness center expansion, the University Center expansion, all the residence hall. I mean, think about it. My goodness, in the last 10 years, what we have done, and we're still continuing to do, by the way, with another residence hall, another fitness center expansion is on the plan, this Academic Success Center, more buildings in the park. It's just, you know, we just keep going. The science building, I didn't want to forget
yes,
that.
Yes, no, that's
big one.
Really
biggie,
important.
Biggie for us.
Yeah, and the planning money has been approved. And has the construction money been approved yet for that?
Building has been number one for SIUE.
Yes,
for,
but in the
10 years. But, you know, then it has to become number one for SIU.
For the system. Where has it been in the system?
In the
I thought
system
it was number
for
four.
For about 4 years, it's been number one.
Okay.
No, it's number one now.
Okay.
For SIU. Then it has to become in the top, at least, take 10 for IBHE, Illinois Board of Education, which it has been now, I think, for 2 years. And then it has
it's been in the top 10?
For IBHE.
Okay.
And then it has to be in the top sort of funding, wherever they draw the line, for the state. So that's where we are. We are in that top funding level for the
right
state.
Now
the
for this year plan. For this session for
yes
this
that's time. Right uh-huh. now the trick is the governor has to find a way to fund his capital plan. He tried it on the back of Keno, that didn't work. He has another plan that's kind of a you may have been hearing about him moving monies to out of fee accounts to these local. It's a rather creative approach, but it would fund his capital bill. Which would allow funding for Governor's Parkway in the city and for the science building for SIUE. We have design money for the engineering building.
Yes, the planning money, about $3 million, isn't it?
But not the construction money. So you think about it. If you just
thinking ahead, it could start in 2008, maybe?
Right.
Okay.
If your interest is solely the science building money, then what you want to happen is you want him to get his capital bill funded, and you want him to get reelected. Remember what I said, I quantified my statement that if your only interest is getting science building money, and you've got the blinders on to everything else, that's what needs to happen. If he doesn't get his capital bill, it puts the science project off another year, and if he doesn't get reelected, it happens every single time a new governor comes in, all capital
everything
projects
is
are
off,
frozen.
Right, yeah.
Not off, but it's at least put off a year until the new governor gets to reprioritize everything,
then
where are we?
That's right.
Who knows? So that's why I'm wrestling with myself personally about where I'm going to come down on that one. Anyway. I wanted to start, talking about HOK and, their design. Since then, and all these buildings that have taken place, we have informally tried to stay with the design concept of that HOK has of the horizontal, you know, lines, the window systems, the brick towers. And I think we've done a pretty good job at staying consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at other, if you actually visit other campuses, then you know there's many of them have a
hodgepodge.
There's just no design consistency.
Right.
I think we're better than that.
Yes.
But we, and even the engineering building, you know, stays in that family. The residence halls stay in that family. They're the newest building. So, and the new residence hall, when you see the picture of that, you'll I think agree that it fits right very well. But we continue to get pressure from architects to expand into new modern sort of looks and about the campus, you know, bringing it into 20%, you know, all that stuff. So the Board of Trustees required each campus to formalize its design guidelines.
Oh, when was that done?
It will be voted on at the next board meeting in March, next week.
Okay.
So the campus took the time and developed design guidelines, and Edwards did, Carbondale did.
Well, that's good.
And ours basically say what we've been doing all along.
Uh-huh.
You know, it doesn't have to mimic, you know, it doesn't have to, mm-hmm. to you know, just reproduce what Giovatta did originally, but it has to fit in the family.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this a public
document? Yeah.
Is this a public document? Sure. I would be interested in seeing
I'll send you a copy of that.
Send me a copy of that. I'd love to see that.
Because there
was some interference with the original design. You know,
yes.
Delight Morris had this idea about there shouldn't be windows in buildings.
Classrooms.
Yeah, right. And so that was a...
Yeah, and Founders and Alumni departed from that because that was after him.
Yes.
But Giovatta's idea always was to put, I just talked to him a few weeks ago.
Good.
He said his idea was always to put windows in the classrooms.
Yes, that's right.
But Delight Morris was very insistent.
And
I never knew the man, but I understand he had a powerful personality.
Uh-huh.
And that was the one thing he won. Mm-hmm. Where he was able.
Right.
Now, then Founders Alumni were built, it changed. But I don't know that that's a significant architectural departure, really.
Maybe not.
It's a concept departure, maybe, from use. But
you know more about this.
But, if you look at Founders and Alumni and then turn and look at Peck, I don't know you would say, oh, there's a significant change in period of design. And
No.
They fit, still fit well architecturally together. So it still holds the campus together.
Mm-hmm.
But you might not even know that they weren't built at the same time, until you get inside and look at how they function.
Mm-hmm.
So having those design guidelines.
This is another thing you might know about from your position, but it does seem to me that alumni and founders were built on the cheap, somewhat on the, a little bit less, with less attention to future survivability than maybe some of the earlier buildings, but I'm not sure about that. I know they've had terrible problems with their roof, which you probably don't have to deal with.
Somewhat, because my money has to deal with it.
Uh-huh.
But but the facilities people, the ones who actually contract that out, for what I consider minor repair.
Right.
Basically, I don't get involved in a project until it costs at least $250,000.
Okay.
And that sounds a little, I don't mean it sounds arrogant. That literally is the limit. I mean, that's what it says. That until a project reaches $250,000, I don't need to get involved in it. And that's on paper. That's the guideline.
Yeah.
But until these... once we have these guidelines approved by the board,
yes,
I can then take them to Mr. Architect and Mrs. Architect and say, sir or ma'am, I appreciate your concept here, but I don't have any flexibility. The board says it has to be in the family.
Oh, good. So, well, that's really good.
It really is a good move. It's a significant move that will most likely go overlooked by the average person. But it is a milestone, I think, in the history or in the life of the university.
Mm-hmm. I think people are aware of it. I've been interviewing these families, all of whom have graduated from SIU, and I was interviewing someone the other day who talked about the unity of the buildings as so important. It was part of their pride in the campus. And I think her degree was in elementary education, and then she came back to the boot camp, you know. But she's proud of the way the buildings blend together.
Right. It's just that heretofore, you're right, I think people are aware of that, but heretofore it was based on whoever was in, who has been in the administrative positions at the time.
Yes.
Very vulnerable and position. To
yes.
Be in. So I think the board did a wise
so
thing.
So it's good, yes,
which
to
been,
have this.
It's been kind of a pain, quite honestly, myself, to help put these things together.
Uh-huh.
But it's a good thing. You know, mm-hmm. It's been, it will prove valuable for years to come.
Yeah.
And I think Ben might have got his degree from SIU, Carbondale. Ben Dickman.
Sorry. Oh, Ben Dickman.
Sorry,
Ben
just,
Dickman.
You're talking
okay.
about community people. And
yes.
Who, you know, I think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So
are you going to be presenting this to the Board of Trustees at the meeting?
The Vice Chancellor will.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And the
all
Assistant
right.
Vice Chancellor.
All right, okay. Okay, and that's coming next week or something?
It's Thursday.
Thursday, okay.
In Carbondale.
Oh, in Carbondale, okay. That's always a pretty drive, or do you fly down there now?
Drive down. Right. It's
drive
so
down.
Easy to drive.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, in that issue, because both campuses were required to submit their design guidelines, I think actually the president is going to present that one.
Uh-huh.
Because it's a combined, it's not really combined effort, but it is a dual initiative.
It must be much harder for Carbondale because they...
I can't wait to see what they wrote.
They should just tear down some others
them.
And start over.
It's a good move for them, too. For them to say, well, we've got this going on and B going on and C going on. From this day forward, we're going to go with A.
Okay. That's good. That sounds...
Now, we'll see.
What happens.
I haven't seen what they've actually written.
Right. Well... Thanks a lot for the.
You mentioned two other things.
Yeah, mention anything else. That's what I was going to say.
You don't want to overlook.
Yeah, tell me.
The history of the university.
Don't overlook.
Because some of them, you know, one perhaps more obvious than the other, and that's kind of a worldwide phenomenon. It's the impact of the internet. When I first came to the university, I had a word processor. I wouldn't put to the internet.
Okay.
It changed. Almost, it happened very earlier in my years here, but it changed how I did business, how everyone did business with the outside world.
Okay, do you know anything about the untangling of, and then the developing of a smooth administration for computing on campus? Or,
I don't, but,
okay.
you're right, that did happen.
Yes, there was a
happened,
problem.
But it is so much better.
Yes.
Academic computing and information technology were two separate functions.
Yes.
That always, my personal, it's butted heads all the time.
Yes.
Someone along the line brought that all under
I think it's probably Warner bringing Jay Sterrett in. Okay.
I get the sense, I have no basis, but I get the sense, other than working with Jay, because Jay also reports, because it's OIT hat, mm-hmm. reports to Ken Nair and as I say, no one reports to me; just their money does. So,
are you talking about the internet as a device for saving time and paper and
as a tool that people have to do their job?
Okay.
Has made that so much more efficient, and the way that Arts and Issues was able to do its job, everything mm-hmm. was done. I'd wait for contracts to come in the mail. I had to wait for program copy to come in the mail. Even contributions had a physical check had to be written
mm-hmm.
and sent to me. And so now all that is done electronically.
Mm-hmm.
When I left that position, contracts would come electronically. I had to sign them, and I could either scan them and send them back or send
mm-hmm.
the hard copy back.
This is great.
Program copy is now all online.
Huh.
So I just, once I had an artist or a speaker booked, I can go to their website,
mm-hmm.
scan, copy and paste their bio and whatever they want in the program. Then not all of them did it, but I had some individual contributions and some corporate contributions where the funds were transferred electronically
mm-hmm.
to the university. So what an amazing sort of
right.
tool it was.
That's
things
good.
Go so much easier.
No one has mentioned that. That's really great.
It's, oh, because it seems, it's an, it's probably, I think we all take it for granted now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my kids can't understand. What do you mean you didn't have a computer in the house? We didn't have a computer in the house. I mean, I was married 5 years before we ever got a microwave. They don't get that either. So we have this little game we play with the kids about sort of, you know, what do you have now that we didn't? And it, you know, kind of just blows their mind, you know, that
Yes. We
were able to survive, you know, with, but, and so it's kind of fun that for them not to talk to my mom, to talk to her about what they didn't have. And they just think she, you know, lived in a cave, and, you know.
Well, okay,
it is fun to look back on that, though, and to think I lived in a small town, and, mm-hmm. and we had a party line.
I'm not being off subject here, but
a party line. So you pick up the phone, and someone might be talking. Well, you had to hang up and wait till your neighbor was done talking. And we also...
You had to hang up. That was the thing.
You had to hang up. Wait for them. In our small town, you didn't have to dial the prefix.
Uh-huh.
You just dialed the last four digits.
Uh-huh.
If you were calling within town.
Uh-huh.
You know, you knew that your neighbor's number was 2345 or whatever. You just dialed 2345 and it rang out. You know, so, I mean, just that sort of... And the phone actually had a cord on it. We don't have a phone in our house that has a cord on it.
No, we don't anymore either.
You know, you start looking around and it's kind of funny. It is. It has nothing to do with this.
No, but that's a very good point about technology. I might just...
Technology.
You might see a paragraph from you in the book on this.
You know, it's a little...
And then what was your second? You said there were two things.
The topic of diversity.
Yeah, good.
As a university, I remember always being, you know, taught to be sensitive to diversity, but it was many years before there was ever a training session
uh-huh.
on what that really meant. At the time, what it meant was make sure all your photographs were balanced. I mean, that was the sense of diversity 20
really?
Years ago. And it was several years before, you know, there was sort of a formal effort that said, this is important
mm-hmm.
to us and we're going to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Was that started under Nancy Belk, really? Or was that the last years of
I would go
Professor
back
Lazarus?
And find out when did... When was Rudy hired into his position?
Oh, he was hired. I'm interviewing him next week. He was hired in 1970.
Okay, well, this position?
No, not in that position.
Yeah, that's what I mean. In this position.
Yes, I think he came into that position.
That's when it was formalized.
Okay.
And it
mm-hmm.
may have taken him, even if he came before that, it may have taken him some while to be able to get a foothold
mm-hmm.
and to be able to make an impact.
Mm-hmm. That's
but
right.
Having that training available, I think it made a big difference. In fact, again, sort of wearing my University City hat, I was able to get that program with Rudy's help implemented at the city so
That's
that all
good.
Of our frontline managers and their staff, their assistants, went through the same program. But
uh-huh.
the university went to the city and did the program there. So, anyway. And I think as a result of that, the Arts Initiative series during that 20 years, and still is today, I think the truly the most diverse program that we have on this campus, and I would put it up against any program.
Mm-hmm.
When you truly are talking about multiple cultures,
mm-hmm.
not just one or two, but multiple
yes.
cultures, I've yet to see a single program that is as diverse as the Arts Initiative series is. And I think that's the one thing that I'm the most proud of for that program is the having developed something that brings all that kind of variety and exposure to our students
mm-hmm.
and to the community.
Great. Oh, that's right. That's a very good point. Any other themes that you think are important for the history you'd like to mention?
We'll talk about money and programming and operational needs pretty much stayed the same. It's always been a program to complement the academic programs.
Uh-huh.
Although I think I see a shift occurring here, but time will have to just bear that out.
A shift?
I don't want to criticize John and his work, but I think I see a shift in more, bringing more what I call popular events and fewer student workshops, faculty workshops, that kind of thing, and less of a tie to the academics. It seems to have developed more, it's developing into more of a program for the community, which the community has always been a part of, but it was first and foremost a complement to the academics. That, you know, for which the community was invited to.
Yes.
Every time I see the new lineup, I think, more and more, it's about the community and what, you know, they want. And if we can work out a student workshop, great. But every single event that I brought in always had a student component.
Yes.
In classroom or workshop.
I remember that.
And sometimes I had to get creative with it, but I know the dance company that I brought in, I think it was called ISO. It you know, obvious to do a workshop with the dance students, so we did that. But what wasn't so obvious that I did, it was really a lot of fun, was to take, because this particular dance group did a lot with fulcrums and balance and counterbalance and weights. So I went to the physics chair at the time. Oh gosh, he's a Green Bay Packer fan. What is his name?
Brandmeier.
Yes. So went to Brandmeier and talked to him, and he said he loved it. He said, "Great, can you bring the a couple of the dancers into my physics class?" Into this one, his or not, but this particular physics class. Sure, we did. So students come in that day, and we push the desk back. And the two dancers said, "You know, this is a physics class, and you talk about these such things.
It's really great.
Let's see how that works with the human body." Mm-hmm. And they love doing it because they always talk to dancers, but to talk to kind of the non-dancer types, to say, when you see someone doing dance, you will now notice that where the weight is, and know that dancers are very much aware of that, and they couldn't do what they do if they weren't aware of where their weight is, where that balance is, and how that relates to the other person they're dancing with. And they actually took them through some exercises, some dance moves, if you will, and the kids, I think, really got a kick out of it.
Oh, that's good. That's really great.
And Brandmeier said, well, one of the things they're talking about, they're discussing in class right now, and I don't remember the subject, but the dancer said, well, I think I understand. If this is what I understand your concept to be, here's how that plays out in dance. So they were able to demonstrate this. So anyway, things like that really made it a part of the academics on campus.
So lately that hasn't been true.
In my opinion, I haven't seen that happening nearly as much. Yes, I see that the dancers do a dance workshop. But I don't think any of the speakers. I might be wrong on this, but I don't think any of the speakers do a student workshop anymore. Well, I always had the speakers meet with students from the Kimmel Leadership Program.
Uh-huh.
That was a given. And then it was automatic that they met with the student from the Kimmel Leadership Program, and then we would supplement that just to get a bigger impact with, if it was a political speaker or something, with a student from political science, and a faculty would bring, a member would bring their entire classroom over for the event. So I would bring others into it as appropriate, but I don't think that happens anymore.
No, I don't know if it does or not.
Well, when Jean-Michel Cousteau was here, he was a great man. Environmental science people came over.
I remember.
Biology people came over, in addition to the Kimmel stuff. But so that kind of, maybe it's what has to be done to keep the funding coming from the community. That's just a change I think I'm observing. I'll wait and see the next lineup, what he's got planned. That's what I keep seeing.
I think there's a committee that plans it, right? That helps to plan it, right?
And yeah. It was a faculty committee up until about the last 3 or 4 years when I was in it, and it was widened to a faculty community committee.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's
maybe
interesting.
Maybe that has an impact to mm-hmm. it. Now, maybe I have had a role in this sort of shift that I'm not aware of. But the faculty, it was always a faculty committee, first and foremost. And then, again, to sort of cast a wider net on financing, it became a faculty and community mm-hmm. committee. Majority faculty, but I think there were 3 or 4 or something. There were some additional members from the community that were brought mm-hmm. in.
Hmm. Well, anything else that
you... Well, if I think of anything, I'll let you know.
Let me know.
And I'll send you a design.